April 11, 1974. Interviewer, Brent Lambert. Informant, Mr. Fred Holsnagel. Subject, Hillsborough Post Office. Could you give me a brief biographical background of yourself, please?
I was born in Lamberton, Minnesota on May 24th, 1888. My folks came to Oregon in the fall of that year and settled near Sherwood in about 1896. My father bought a blacksmith shop. He had been a blacksmith in Minnesota. He bought a blacksmith shop there in Sherwood, and we lived there until I lived there until I came to Hillsborough here in 1912.
Could you tell me how you began with the post office?
In the spring of 1912, the Argus carried a notice asking persons who are interested in postal work to take a civil service examination for three positions that would be open in that office. And in July, on July 12th, I think it was, I came and took the examination together with some 11 or more others, and I was one of the successful ones in being called to fill one of the three positions. And in due time, we were called to report on September 8th, which happened to fall on Sunday. And I'll turn it off.
Would you list some of your previous co-workers and the previous postmasters, please?
The other two who were selected to fill the positions were Arthur Davis, who had some time previous time been employed by the postmaster and who was now chosen to be the assistant postmaster. And the other one was Miss Bertha Hesse, who was chosen as the third employee. We were requested to appear for duty on September 8th, which happened to fall on a Sunday. The postmasters. Persons who served as postmasters in the Hillsborough Post Office during my residence here since 1912 were B.P. Cornelius, James C. Lampkin, from 1913 to 1921, Henry A. Ball, 1921 to 1924, myself from 1924 to 1936, and Mr. McFeeters, who had been a pharmacist and a banker from 1936 to 1950, followed by Robert L. Melquist for about 2 years. And then in about 1952, Mr. Chester R. Merrill was appointed, who served till about 1971. And at present, Ernest J. Loden is the postmaster. He was taken from the post office clerks.
Could you give me a rundown on the post offices that are no longer in service, that have been supplanted by the Hillsborough Post Office?
Well, yeah, since my time here, the Orenco, Oregon Post Office, the Buxton, Strassel, Schofield, Timber, and Cochrane Post Offices on the PRN Railway have been discontinued, and Roy, Gales Creek and Laurel, and Multnomah and Metzger and Garden Home in the eastern part of the county.
How are those areas served now?
Served, I think the last three mentioned are served by Portland, and Orenco is served by the local office, and most of them are served now by rural or star service, rural service, rural service or star service.
Would this be out of the Hillsborough Post Office?
What?
Would this be out of the Hillsborough Post Office?
No, not necessarily. Most of them along the railroad to Tillamook are served, I think, through the Forest Grove Office. Although Manning, which is still an office, is a station of the Hillsborough Post Office now. And Gales Creek is through Forest Grove. Laurel area is served through the Hillsborough. And Mulnomen, Metzger, and Garden Home, I think, are served through the Portland office.
Can you give me an idea of what the significance of the post office or the postal service was in the everyday life of the farmers around here in the early days?
Just what do you have in mind? People in the area here from as far out as 15 to 20 miles sometimes were served by rural carriers from this office, and they depended on not only their mail but for merchandise that they received from some of the Portland stores and as far and from even from Chicago, from those stores there, and mail order houses. And yes, it was. They depended very much on the mail because if a mail ever was late or anything like that, well, we'd always hear from them.
Can you go into some detail at all about the the plans that were afoot at one point for considering Hillsborough as an alternative airport for Portland, an alternative to the Vancouver field?
No, I don't know too much about that. I suppose that I read about it too when it was in being talked about, but I can't tell you too much about that. I can't.
When was that that was being considered?
Oh, Well, that's pretty hard for me to tell. That was in the early part when the airport here was first started, and I don't have the date of that. I wouldn't say very clearly at all when that would be.
Could you list for me what you feel are the most significant changes you've seen in the post office during your period of service?
Well, yes, the post office when I came here had postal, what they called postal savings. People could deposit up to $2,500 and receive 2% interest on it. but that came in about 1911 and has been discontinued at just about the time that I retired in 1957. Also, the COD parcel service, we had to collect, people would send merchandise COD, and we would have to collect the money and send it back to them. And that has been discontinued too, just about the time that I was retired. Of course, we started with two city carriers on October 1st, 1916. And as time went by, we added to the carriers, and now I think there must be some 30 odd clerks and carriers in the post office. The office was made a first class office in 1940, so that from 1912 to 1940. It was a fairly slow, it developed very, very slowly, that is. But about that, that was about the time of the war. And then housing began becoming scarce around here, and a lot of houses were built, and the town developed, and naturally the service had to keep up with it, postal service had to keep up with it.
Would you describe for me a typical day at the post office when you began?
Well, the day started at 7 o'clock in the morning, and there were three of us employees, and the postmaster, everybody had their job, but generally, you did almost everything in there. And, however, the assistant postmaster, his assignment was to keep the books and also help with the distribution of mail. And Miss Hesse was a distributor, a fast distributor, I might say, and she could distribute mail and have a conversation with someone else at the same time. She was marvelous when it came to distributing mail. And myself, I had charge of the, oh yes, Miss Hesse also had charge of the money order business, and I had charge of the postal savings business. Then about 9 or 9.30, the mail would come in, the main principal mail would come in, and everybody would have to distribute and sort and distribute the mail to the carriers and to the boxes and to the general delivery. So by 11 o'clock, usually a little before, I had the mail distributed, we would open the open the general delivery window. The fact is, all the windows would be closed during the distribution period. And then we would open the general delivery, and of course there would be a long line of people calling for the mail, and the office lobby would be full of people getting their mail from their boxes. We had some 600 boxes in the lobby. Then we received mail several times a day, all throughout the day. So there was always some distributing going on, and you couldn't be idle. You had to be doing something all the time. The postmaster was not at that time just the administrator. He was also helped to distribute the mail and to prepare the mail for dispatch. In fact, the second postmaster we had, Mr. Lampkin, that's all he did was take the mail as it came into the office and cancel it and prepare it for dispatch. That's all he did.
End of track one, continued on track two. Mr. Holznagel is continuing his description of a typical day in the post office.
And then about 5 o'clock in the afternoon, our last mail, which was the second largest that we received during the day, would be distributed to the carriers and to the boxes, and then the post office closed at 6 o'clock.
You say you had to work Sundays. What did you do on Sundays?
Well, we distributed that morning mail that came in. We distributed that to the carriers and to the boxes and to the general delivery. But the general delivery, as I call, was not opened on Sunday. It was, but people could come into the lobby and get their mail through their lockboxes.
On Sunday?
On Sunday, on holidays too.
Would you discuss various aspects of the rural carrying, please?
Well, there were four carriers, and they carried their mail with horse-drawn vehicles. When I came here, until the roads were improved, and the motor vehicle became in general use, and then the carriers changed to delivering mail with motor vehicles. Their routes at a standard route was 24 miles at first, and then they changed to motor vehicles, the standard route was 30 miles, and some of the routes were 60 miles long. So in the winter time, in the winter time, at Christmas time, the carriers would leave around 9 to 9:30, and they wouldn't be back sometimes till 7 o'clock or later. Of course, when they carried the automobile, they could go faster, and they still would be, with a 60-mile route, they still would be in as late as 5:30 or 6 o'clock. So they had a long day ahead of them.
What were the salary ranges?
Starting salaries were $600 per year for clerks and $700 for the assistant postmaster for the first year. And upon completion of satisfactory service after each year, the salaries would be advanced to $100 per year. I don't know what the road carrier salaries were. They were paid on a mileage basis. They had a basic salary, I think, I don't remember what it was, but they also, depending on the length of their route, they had mileage addition, and they do that now too.
Did the government maintain the rail carriers' vehicles, or were
their own responsibility?
No,
the employees are required, and the rail carriers are required to service and buy and keep up and service their own vehicles. They get an allowance for that now, and they get mileage allowance and upkeep allowance.
Was that true during the horse and buggy?
No, no, it wasn't. Well, the first part, yes, they had to furnish the horses and the vehicles, and they didn't get a very big salary either. It was, but they seemed to be glad to get it. Well, I was glad to get what I got, but there was always the chance for advancement was there, so I thought it was a good deal for me.
How were appointments made to the Postal Department?
Until 1972, or about that time, postmasters were political appointees and came from various occupations. They were appointed for a period of 4 years for each term, and had to be reappointed whenever their 4 years ran out, or if the administration changed, they might discontinue one postmaster and appoint another one. They came from all walks of life, such as sheet metal worker, a former county school superintendent, pharmacist, banker, and two of us were appointed from the Postal Service. Having served in the Post Office, we're advanced in the postmastership.
Did you go into receipt of the mails by the Post Office from other post offices?
Yes, they were. Originally, the mails were received here over the Southern Pacific Railway Service and the Oregon Electric. And the Southern Pacific delivered their mail at the 2nd and 2nd Street anyway, and they were brought to the office and carried to the trains by a man by the name of Henry Hesse, and he used a horse and wagon for the purpose. And then when the Southern Pacific changed their mode of transportation to electrical, built a loop which started at the main line of the railroad, main line, came up north on 6th and then west on Main Street, and connected with the PRNN office, and then on down to back to the main office, up to Four School, McMinnville, and on to Corvallis.
When you began with the post office, you batched to the Tualatin Hotel. Could you tell me something about the Tualatin Hotel, please?
Yes, it was run by a man by the name of John Chute and his wife. I paid $22 a month for board and room, and there were two of us who paid that, and the proprietor said that he gave us that rate because he could depend on that, and that would pay for his grocery bill for the month, and whatever else he took in would be available, I suppose. A lot of people would come in from, or several people would come in from the country to stay over the weekend, and they would stay there and just to be in town. It's like we do when we go to put them out to take in a show or something like that, you see. I wish I was better at this thing.
What was the reputation of the hotel?
Well, it was, at that time, the only hotel in the place. And it had a good reputation. It was not a very... accommodations were just ordinary, common, not fancy. Well, there was no hotel on the corner of 3rd and Main. And it was considered, I guess, a little... I know the traveling salesman always put up at the other hotel. What do they call it now? It was a cement block, made of cement blocks. And they had a nice dining room in there, and the traveling salesman used to stay there. The old Tualatin was originally, prior to the time that Foote had it, was managed by Mr. Rufus White. I think he possibly had started that. And he was related to the Gateses, who had very much to do with city water and city lights here, that kind of thing.
What was the layout of the Tualatin Hotel?
Well, it was a two-story frame building, had a porch in front. You could always see somebody sitting there talking, and it had a veranda, the second floor had a veranda, and it was, well, not quite as big, not nearly as big as the wheel store is that stands there now. There was a space between that and the store east of it. But they could accommodate possibly 20, 30 people, probably. Not more than that, I don't think more than that.
Did they have a pretty steady business in boarders?
Yes, boarders they had. They had boarders more so than the other hotel. They had good meals. They served good meals, and people like to stay there. There's people living in the, around the country here, that's where they stayed.
Coming in on holidays at work?
What?
Coming in on holiday?
Well, on holidays and Saturdays. Stay, come in Saturday and stay till Sunday and then go back out again. Well, there's one fellow that used to come there, Alec Griffith, he used to come in from Laurel out there, about 7 miles, and he'd come in every Saturday, he'd come in there and stay overnight. Just to be around people that he knew, I suppose. He'd like to talk.
What were the rates?
What?
What were the rates?
The rates? I can't say. I don't, aside from my own, I don't know what they charged. It wasn't much. But I can't say just what they charged. I don't recall. I suppose I knew at the time. But aside from what I paid, I don't recall what it was.
Were the meals served at individual tables or on a large table?
No, they were served in family style.
Was the price for all you could eat?
Yes, you could get all you wanted to eat, yes. It was put on the table and you took what you wanted. But you can see that anymore now. Not for a long time, you haven't seen that.
What color was the hotel painted when you were staying?
As I recall, it was a sort of a gray color. It was a gray paint. And it was not painted too well. It was not in run-down condition at all, but it wasn't painted every 2 or 3 years, I know that.
I read somewhere that it had a reputation as being one of the finest hotels in the county. Early on, now had that reputation been eclipsed by the time you stayed there, or?
I presume it had, yes, because at that time this other hotel, of course, was there when I came, and old name of J.C. Tamasi, who was a doctor, had built that the new hotel, and he catered to a different class of people, but the old park was the. Well, I presume it was the only hotel here for a long, long time.
Why was it eventually torn down?
Wheels built their store there. That was about 1927, as I recall.
Had the hotel been losing money, or?
No, I don't think so. But this fellow had it. Moved away, he moved to Portland. He became a policeman in Portland. So he sold it, and of course, they sold it to the Wheels, and the Wheels, of course, tore it down. No, it wasn't. I don't think it was a losing affair. I think, John, in those times, you didn't make as much money as you do now, and if they could make a living, why, that was because they run it themselves. They had very little outside help, he and his wife.
End of track 2, end of interview.